Welcome to Inside Voices, a well-read magazine, Between the Pages podcast. I'm host Robert Gwaltney.
And I'm host Jeffrey Dale Lofton. We are so excited to be in conversation with Zachary Steele today. A little bit about him. So Zachary is the Broadleaf Writers Association founder and executive director, and the author of four novels, including The Weight of Ashes, which was nominated for Georgia Author of the Year in 2021, and Perfectly Normal, which is going to be published next month. He's been featured in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Publishers Weekly, Writers Magazine, Shelf Awareness, and City Lights with Lois Reitzes on NPR. And currently, he's hard at work on The Fallen Hero, which is the first in a series of fantasy novels. Welcome, Zachary. We're happy to have you.
Thank you very much, Jeffrey and Robert. I'm very, very thrilled to be here.
So first up, let me congratulate you, Zachary. I was first introduced to your writing with Weight of Ashes, which I loved. Your next novel, Perfectly Normal, I also had an opportunity to read an advanced copy of, so thank you for that. And also had an opportunity to say some lovely and very truthful things about it. Yeah, it makes its way into the world November 21st, 2023. Your protagonist, 16-year-old Nate Alexander, lives with a condition known as chromesthesia. He also grapples with the challenges of undiagnosed autism. Talk about young Nate and what drew you to creating a character experiencing these things.
Well, I mean, I as a sort of outsider growing up, I've always had a fondness for writing about kids like The Weight of Ashes has a group of kids that are very much outsiders. And Nate was always going to be on the outside of things, but his outside is very different. And I wanted to be able to talk about autism primarily, because, it's something that is very deeply personal to me, is trying to help generate awareness of what it means to be autistic, and not just the negative stereotypes, but the positives that come with it, the sort of exuberant joy and heightened empathy and things like that. And beyond that, also being able to capture what it is to parent an autistic child, because I feel like though the autistic children are focused on and is as characters, you don't often really get a full feel of what it means to parent an autistic child. So I kind of drove Nate into that. Chromesthesia was one that was just something that fascinated me. I wanted Nate, because I have a love for music, to also share in that love of music, but also be extremely gifted as a musician. And with this, the concept of being able to see colors for sound just fascinated me. And so I explored it, and the deeper I went, the more I knew that it was something that I needed to pair with Nate. And it does happen that though not a high percentage of autistics have some form of synesthesia, which is just a sensory swap that chromesthesia falls under, it is actually statistically shown that about 20% of people who have chromesthesia are autistic.
So I think I heard recently that maybe one out of 35 individuals are living with autism, which is pretty significant. So you're writing about this character with undiagnosed autism. You know, as a writer, especially in today's climate, it's a huge responsibility representing individuals who are outside our own frame of reference. Talk a little bit about what steps you took to feel like you really got that right.
Well, I will say for both autism and chromesthesia, that it was vital to me to capture the authentic experience, you know, what it truly means to live a life under both of those umbrellas. And so for me, that meant that not only did I have to do my own general research, but I had to be able to both talk to people who are either autistic or parent an autistic, or in the case of chromesthesia, somebody who actually has chromesthesia. And so as I was writing, you know, I was funneling this down to these individuals who were helping me to make sure that I was capturing the authentic experience of what it means. And it was just very important to me to get it right. I don't want to use autism as a vehicle for a story. I instead wanted to be able to tell a story that offered autism a platform for people to understand a little bit better what it means and why it's often stereotyped the wrong way.
Yeah, you know, and I think that, you know, you handled it beautifully and with great sensitivity. So that certainly came through on the page.
Zachary, a little bit more about, you know, you mentioned music is so important to you. Can you tell us a little bit more about why music is so important to you and how you decided to really focus in on that for this novel?
Yeah, I mean, without spending the entire platform talking or podcast talking about music, which I can do, music has always been extremely important to me. And I feel like it's something that fuels my creative energy as a writer. And so as I've grown, many of the stories that I've developed have actually found a place first in music. The Weight of Ashes, for example, started with one scene and Like a Prayer by Madonna. And it sort of built from there with the pop culture and the music and everything laced into it. Perfectly Normal is no different. There's one particular scene with Hey Jude that both of these were, I walk a lot. And so I'll be listening to music as I walk, and it just, the scenes will just unfold. And I end up with that one scene and have to build a story around it. And I think from like this instance, the one scene, I knew in that moment that Nate was autistic because I could see it. But the music then ends up getting threaded throughout the story. In fact, I have soundtracks that I create on Spotify based on the songs that I put into these books.
I'm fascinated with the way artists translate or are inspired by one form of art, and they translate it into something else. I know that I listen to a lot of particular pop songs from the 70s, 60s and 70s when I was writing Red Clay Susie. And Robert, music is so important for the Cicada Tree. Tell us more about that. Robert, do you want to comment on how music inspires you?
Well, no, I mean, I think that that's an element that I connected with in Zachary's work, you know, the use of music throughout his work. And for me, you know, Zachary stated that part of his creative process sometimes is walking. I'm curious to know, Zachary, do you hear a song? Does a song come first and then an idea or a scene or a plot point in a book for you?
For both of these books, The Weight of Ashes and Perfectly Normal, it was, I have a playlist. It's like 17 hours long, so I never know what's going to come up on it. And it's music across about like five or six different decades. And it just happened, like if we focus on Perfectly Normal, that Hey Jude came on, and you know, specifically as you get to the end of it and you've got that big build, it just had this vision of an auditorium and a kid at a piano. And I don't want to like talk about the scene too much, but just everything that transpired after it just kind of filled the void as I was listening to the music. And every time that it would, you know, that I would play it, because I was obviously at that point wanting to hear it more often, I would play it, and it would just like, the scene would then get a little bit bigger and a little bit more full. And eventually I had something that I knew I had a story that I needed to tell. Like, how did I get to this point in the story? The Weight of Ashes is kind of the same thing. It ends up building to one particular scene. And so I kind of built it off that. And I did want to add one more thing about music and why in this particular story, it was so important for me to make it a central part of who Nate was. And that's because that music is transformative. You know, it's something that as we grow up listening to it, it leads us to bigger and bolder ideas, or bigger and bolder music, or bigger and bolder creative endeavors, whatever it happens to be. And I wanted to be able to capture that transformative nature in the story for Nate.
That brings me back to actually the title of the book, Perfectly Normal, because you explore through young Nate what it means to be normal. And mm-hmm. and so how did your perception of normal change from the time you got that inspiration from music and began to write the book until the time you finished editing it and the book was fully formed?
Yeah, it's funny because I growing up, I was anything but normal in the eyes of my peers. And even as an adult, I've been that way many times, but I never really stopped to contemplate what the definition of normal meant. Probably as I've aged, I've cared less what other people perceive in me, but writing the story actually forced me to look at the definition of it. And it forced me to try to contemplate why it is that people have a definition of normal to begin with when nobody really can possibly tell you what it is. Because normal is something that is defined by a personal experience, a personal system of beliefs. Like if you don't conform to what I see as normal, then I have to consider you abnormal. When in fact, I could be the abnormal one in the eyes of the majority, who knows? So I wanted to explore that through many characters, that definition of normal, and very particularly through Nate's journey, because he is anything but normal in the eyes of the world when we meet him. And his experience in meeting a brand new student, Julian Mack, you know, kind of opens him up to greater possibilities and into things that might be considered more normal. And I wanted to see what became of him through that particular definition.
I think that, you know, Jeffrey and I, well, I will speak for Jeffrey because he and I both had these conversations on many occasions, but, you know, we both, of course, have felt like we've not fit the mold of what people typically define as normal.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about how how you identify as not having been normal as a young person, and how you identify today as an adult, perhaps dwelling on the fringe. How does that impact your voice as a writer?
I feel like, I mean, my stories are, whether we're talking about these two books or even the fantasy stories, I am very big on found family, and I'm very big on, you know, friends coming together in ways that even family cannot. You know, through these stories, I feel like I've begun to gain in confidence, I suppose, because I'm kind of channeling so much that I experienced as a child, where I was incapable for whatever reason for speaking for myself or defending myself or, you know, fighting on behalf of, I don't mean physically, but just generally fighting on behalf of myself. And being able to write these stories gives me an avenue to do something that I couldn't do when I was a kid, something that I really couldn't do until I was in my mid-30s. And that's, you know, stand up with confidence and say, this is who I am, you know, whether you think it's normal or not, whether this conforms to your understanding of the way we are supposed to operate or not. And I feel like the more of these stories that I tell, the more of those open wounds, you know, the more that they heal from those days of my youth.
Yeah, because the word normal, you know, it's a form of it is normalize, which, and that means to accept,
mm-hmm.
to into the general, more, you know, general acceptance in the general population. So that's certainly a laudable effort. Do you think of it? Do you think of your writing as a way to help others who live on the fringes, as I call it, to help them feel more part of something, a community, less?
Yeah. And I'm sure you would both agree that, you know, if we're fortunate enough to have one person read something that we've written and have it transform their perspective to something that is better for them, you know, something that they, some moment of self-realization where they're like, oh, I never thought of it that way, and I need to be better about this, or I can do better about this, then for me, that's a win. You know, I can't worry about how many people are affected by it. You know, when I wrote Weight of Ashes, I had no idea I was going through some 30-year-old unresolved grief from my childhood. And it ended up helping me get through that. And I really wanted, if one person could see within that story a path to healing, then I felt like I had done my job. And really, I can't worry if one person does or not, but I mean, it's my hope that there's at least one person out there that I can affect positively with what I write.
Absolutely. You know, you also accomplish a beautifully drawn character by the name of Julian Mack, who's an openly gay character who enters into a challenging friendship with our young Nate. Talk a little bit about Julian and the inspiration for the character.
I love Julian. I think Nate will obviously always be the champion of this book for me, but and he should be. But Julian for me has a lot of special meaning and purpose, and it's not because he's gay. I wanted I wanted to have a gay character there because one, you go back to what Jeffrey, what you're talking about with Normalize, and I feel like its efforts, like these stories that people tell. I don't want to elevate myself too high, but that, you know, that we as society are trying to normalize things that have never been normalized before, and acceptance of a gay lifestyle is one of them. That to me is, it's very important that we as a collective unit of humanity begin to understand and accept. And it was important also to have that character be gay that is a best friend to Nate, because Nate is exploring things in his own world, and Julian latches onto him because of reasons that are disclosed in the book, that he becomes very important to Julian, and it felt more, I guess, accessible as a story to portray him that way. But I love the journey that Julian has in this book, because he's much like everybody. He has his own secrets, but he guards them very closely. And, you know, we're not sure what his motivations are or why he's so fixated on Nate, but the exploration of that and the truths of what make Julian Julian, I think I still love reading them, and that sounds so self-important. I love reading my own book, but I don't know, his story just, it gets me every time.
Well, I think that, you know, it's certainly not arrogance to love your characters. I think that that's why characters are successful, because an author loves them enough to write about them, you know, and you obsess about heart. Them. Yes. Yeah, and they become real. So, you know, I loved reading him as well. So
thank you.
I have that brings a question to mind for both of you, actually. You mentioned loving, you know, your characters, loving reading what you've written. So I'm really interested to hear about your experience working with a publisher to translate your books into audiobook format. And what was that like? And are you narrating it, Zachary?
I am not, thankfully, because the amount of work that's involved in that. I mean, I love doing it. I when I would read The Weight of Ashes, people are like, oh my gosh, you need to read this as an audiobook. And I'm like, yeah, I've got time for that. But I will say, and then I'll, Robert will speak for himself, but it was surreal having somebody read my work to me, you know, to be able to actually have a conversation with the person who's going to be doing it and talk individual characters and characteristics, and to have somebody perform those people for me. I say for me, because I'm the only one who's listened to it so far. But you know, it's just a surreal experience. And Tyler Pirung is the person that is reading Perfectly Normal, and he did such a wonderful job. It was so important that Nate was handled with care, because again, stereotypes, and trying to make sure that what we're doing here is not offensive to the autistic community, but something that would be uplifted and supported and used as an example of what it means to be autistic. And he did such a wonderful job. So when I cannot wait for people to hear his performance and what he brought to the characters, and being able to bring out aspects of characters that I didn't honestly even know existed. It was wonderful.
What is his name again?
Tyler Pirung. It's Pirrung. And he is he's theater trained. He's musicals. He travels around the country doing, he was in Spamalot in Atlanta for a while. He played Buddy the Elf in Elf. So he's extraordinarily talented.
Great. I can't wait to listen to it.
Well, you know, Zachary certainly is way ahead of me in my journey to experiencing what it's like to be involved with an audiobook. There's a very talented woman named Allison Johnson who's going to be voicing the book, performing the book. And of course, you know, my book is Southern fiction, so my greatest fear is someone just coming to the table with a really Southern is hard to do, and it's hard to nail properly. She has such a lovely, resonant voice, so I think that she's going to do a lovely job. And like Zachary, I think it'll be a very emotional experience for me to hear it when the project is complete and it comes out. I think it's February 2024.
So what year is next?
Yeah. I know. I'm thinking, what year is
coming
next?
Up? That's coming up. That's soon.
You know, yeah. I want to touch base. You know, Jeffrey, you and Zachary were talking, and this is just really an observation about the importance of work, perhaps normalizing certain issues or topics in society. But I also think that there's value, you know, in perfectly normal, in that it gives individuals who are experiencing autism or who might be gay opportunities to experience positive depictions of themselves in literature, which is something that was greatly lacking when I was coming along as a young gay person. We had, you know, very little opportunity to experience, as I said earlier, positive representations, and it would have made all the difference in the world. So I think that it's supportive twofold. It is bringing these topics and these rich lives of individuals that others might not have ever experienced. And it's also filling a void perhaps of loneliness for others.
Yeah, I agree. And to have people come up to you who've read your work and to say, I see myself in it. This means something to me. I feel as though I'm not alone in the world. And for every one person who does approach you, how many more are there who don't? Because they just aren't in the same room with you. Their paths don't cross. It's amazing. It's an amazing outcome.
You know, we talk about, you know, well, as writers, you know, it's a lonesome endeavor. Being young people growing up, atypical, is a lonesome experience. Jeffrey and I both had the opportunity, and I have the good fortune to be a member of your organization, Zachary Broadleaf, and I'm on the board. And Jeffrey recently had an opportunity at this recent conference to participate as a panelist. I'd like you to talk a little bit about Broadleaf and the role you play.
Again, could be a whole podcast. Robert certainly knows, and Jeffrey, you've experienced a little bit, that if I start talking about Broadleaf, I can just go. I didn't have a writing community, and I had learned what a true writing community could really feel like by experiencing one elsewhere with James River Writers in Richmond. And I loved it so much that I had two options. I could either move to Richmond and become part of it, which I deeply considered, or I could stay where I was and where all my connections and my network was, and I could create one myself. And did I know anything about a nonprofit world, running a nonprofit? No, but I could learn. And that's that one little wonderful thing about being a writer is, you know, research is kind of secondhand. It's like, if I don't know it, I can learn it. So I'll just learn it. And did, you know, the thing that Bill Bryson talks about in Short History of Nearly Everything, where he talked about going around the world asking the smartest people the dumbest questions. And so I just started doing that. And voila, there I was with an organization and a wonderful founding board of five people who helped create this organization and then build the writing community after that. And you know, pandemic aside, we've done very well as far as building that community, and it's continuing to grow. And much like talking about people being affected by things, getting the emails or talking to people in person or just hearing secondhand the stories of people who were so positively affected by their experience coming to the conference or being a member or coming to meetings or whatever it happens to be, it's precisely why I do this. You know, on those days when I'm so exhausted because I have so many hats that I have to put on, and I find myself asking, like, why am I doing this again? You know, and it's just solely for that. I mean, it's never been, other than wanting to have a writing community for myself, it's never been for me. It's been wanting to take what I was given from others and pass it on, and to give opportunity to writers that didn't exist, opportunities to network and to grow personal relationships with people who understand their journey, to sit face to face with agents or to meet wonderful authors like the both of you at conferences, and to have personal conversations where they feel like they're just like you. They just haven't gotten that contract yet. It just means so much to me. And I really hope that it lives on well beyond my work with it. I want it to be able to continue to grow and thrive and be that amazing thing for writers everywhere.
Community seems to be a big common theme in these conversations that Robert and I have had with other authors and other folks in the publishing world.
Yeah.
It sounds like Broadleaf is a place of community. I'm interested to know, what questions do you get most often from attendees or people who are considering coming or people who've been year after year? What is it that they really want?
I mean, I would say the questions that I hear the most often are the basic ones about how to get an agent, or, you know, how to query, or how do you work with an editor, things like that, that are just part of the process. But really what I hear from people more than anything is exactly that, the community. They know they spend all of their time right here at this desk with this computer in this head, and there's nothing outside of it, but there are worlds and worlds and worlds of people inside there that they wish they could really talk to. But it is a solitary thing, and I just see it for people who have never been to the conference before. And I have enough back and forth with people, or I have in the past years, that I kind of know who's coming in to their first conference, because they'll like email me with their excitement. And being able to see them enter the room and to really see and feel the energy from the people that are there, it just, the smiles that grow, you know, they may not be asking for it because they don't know what it is that they're lacking, but as soon as they're in the community, as soon as they're part of the group of minds that are working toward the same goal, they become different people as writers, and it's wonderful to watch.
If anyone's interested in attending next year, if they haven't attended in the past, where would they go for the information to know where to go and how to get there and all that?
Well, we keep all of our information on our website at broadleafwriters.com. I will say that we don't have information yet for the 9th annual, which is next September 21st and 22nd of 2024, right, Robert?
Yes.
And we don't have that information up there because we're just starting planning, but we do have a wonderful image that is for the 9th annual conference. But Broadleaf Writers not only has all the information on that, it has information about our series of programs called Right Now. It has information about monthly meetings that we have, how you can become a member and what you gain from it. And also there are links there to our YouTube channel where all of our Right Now programs and some workshops and really a lot of content from the virtual conferences we did during the pandemic is available for free.
And I see a lot of posting on social media. There are a lot of tips daily, mm-hmm. You know, bite-sized chunks of information as well.
Yeah. So we are on Facebook. We are on Instagram. We are on Twitter X, or X Twitter, whichever one you want to call it. It used to be a Twitter, so it could be X Twitter. And we have a TikTok account as well. I think that's maybe where we capped it. I'm not sure at this point, but basically we can be found everywhere. Like, so we have the YouTube channel too. And there's lots of information for you to gather without having to drop a dime. Though we do hope that you'll register for the conference.
As we wind down at the end of our time, Zachary, what is next for you beyond Perfectly Normal?
There are two projects that I'm starting, but I'm getting ready to start another book called Home, which is a story of siblings who are coming home for their mother is entered into hospice, and so they're coming from different parts of the country, and it's a story about, I like to explore definitions. Apparently it's a story about home and what that means to people, and obviously the dysfunction of a family, but also finding common ground at a time when somebody is getting ready to pass. So it's kind of like, okay, so I'm going to take the grief from the first book and put it in the third book, and the definition need in the third book. So I guess this is a common thing for me, but also I'm very close to a contract on The Fallen Hero, which is the first series of a fantasy series about a young boy who discovers that the world of his favorite series of books is actually real, and that he is from it. And much of the machinations of bringing him there and hiding him to begin with were in the hands of a mysterious character called the Storyteller.
Wonderful. Well, we're looking forward to that. And I am so excited that Perfectly Normal is going to be making its way out into the world in just a few weeks, really. So congratulations.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for taking the time to meet with Jeffrey and me.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. And I mean, I would do this anytime.
Well, we will have you back.
Yeah.
That sounds great. I would love it.
So, gentle listeners, until next time, for Inside Voices, I'm Robert Gwaltney.
And I'm Jeffrey Dale Lofton. And remember, to be creative is to be courageous.